Hello, awesome humans, and welcome to today's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast. I'm Natalie, your host, and I'm so grateful that you're here. As a quick reminder, we record this podcast with a live virtual audience, so you will hear me respond to comments and questions throughout. If you'd like to join our live audience, I would love it. You can go to nataliecogan.com to see the schedule of upcoming shows and to sign up. Now, before we dive into today's topic, just take a deep breath to arrive in this moment right now. This time is for you, and I hope you find this episode really valuable. Hello, awesome humans. We are live. Welcome to the Awesome Human Podcast. If you're listening, welcome to Awesome Human Podcast Live. If you're here with us on Zoom, welcome to your Wednesday, if you're with us real time, whatever day you're listening. And yeah, we're also live. I'm just checking on Facebook, all the places. So hi, everyone. So grateful we get to all gather and connect together. And I'm really excited about our topic today. I think it's so timely and important and necessary. We're going to be talking about finding more ways to genuinely connect. And I have an amazing guest joining me in a little bit. Susan McPherson is going to join us. She's the author of a really wonderful book called The Lost Art of Connecting. And Susan is someone whose work really inspired me, just seeing what she's doing on social. We didn't know each other before I reached out. She has some really wonderfully, I think, engaging and open ideas around how we can use technology to feel more connected in a world where technology, I think, makes us feel disconnected from each other. She's got a really interesting framework of gather, ask, and do that she's going to talk about in terms of creating more meaningful relationships at work and in life. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. She'll be joining us in a little bit. And as we gather, I'm just opening my chat if you're here with us live. And a reminder, if you are listening to this on your favorite podcasting platform, if you ever do want to join the live recording of the podcast, you get to be part of the audience on Zoom. You get to ask me questions, ask our guests questions. All you need to do is go to nataliecogan.com podcast, and there's an easy way for you to register to join us. So we're going to begin the way we always begin. I always have to remind myself to not skip this part. But we're called the Awesome Human Podcast for a reason, because the reason I do this and the reason I do all the work that I do is I want to help you embrace your awesomeness and your humanness. And I want to help you struggle less, including with the negative thoughts you have in your head and the negative self-talk, so that you can thrive more, so you can unleash your unique contributions in the world. So we begin with a little ritual that we have. If this is your first time, complete the following statement. Today, I'm an awesome human because. Today, I'm an awesome human because. And if you are here with us live, I always invite you to put it into chat and I'll read some of your contributions. If you are listening, take a moment. You could even pause me. Shut up, Natalie. And complete that sentence. Think of something you appreciate about yourself. And I always like to remind you that the inner critic in our heads needs no training. I think for all of us human beings, that inner critic can be really loud. Think about it, right? You wake up in the morning, you go through your day. How many times do you think of something that is wrong about you or not good enough or this or that? And so we have to practice giving our inner appreciator a voice, because there's tons of research that shows that constantly criticizing yourself and talking to yourself in a negative way reduces your motivation, reduces your resilience, increases stress, actually helps it, makes it harder for you to reach your goals. And learning how to talk to yourself in a supportive way, learning how to appreciate things about yourself, does the opposite. It improves your well-being. It helps you do hard things. It helps you achieve your goals. So that's one of the things I really encourage you to do on a daily basis. And I love when my chat, I'm just opening it up, explodes with your responses. So today I'm an awesome human because, and I'm going to read some of your responses, but I really encourage you to practice this on a daily basis. When I do keynotes, in most of my keynotes, this is the first thing I ask my audience to do. I ask them to pair up. If you've been to some of my talks or you've seen me do this, I ask the audience members to pair up and take turns telling each other to, I'm an awesome human because. And so many people say it's really awkward to do that. It feels weird. It feels unnatural. Think about that. It feels unnatural to acknowledge something good about ourselves. Where did that come from? Like, where did that idea come from that it is bad or not humble or not helpful to acknowledge something good about yourself? So I share this with you because, and I think I share this in every episode, because I actually, research aside, just my own experience of going from someone who I spent most of my life criticizing myself and thinking that that's going to help me get better and improve and be the best version of myself. And then after I went through burnout, as if you're familiar with my work, I've shared my experience a lot. One of the things that really not just helped me heal, but one of the fundamental practices and core kind of skills that I have learned that I believe fundamentally has made me better as a human, as a mom, as a wife, as a teacher, as a speaker, as a podcast host, as a writer in every way, is that I've learned to be friends with myself. I've learned to be really good friends with myself. It doesn't mean that there's nothing wrong with me. It doesn't mean that I don't work to improve, but I do it from a place of self-respect. And I try to practice finding things about myself that I do appreciate, because again, the inner critic is always there. So this is your mini TED talk that I think I might give every episode, but I think it is so important about how important it is to embrace and honor the good in yourself, what you appreciate about yourself, because it actually gives you the fuel to contribute as you all do, to do the things you want and need to do. And when you want to improve, I think most people that, I think most of us want to grow and improve and embody our full selves, you have a lot more energy. And I don't just mean physical, you have a lot more mental, emotional, spiritual, physical energy to do that when you do it from a place of self-respect and self-appreciation than self-criticism. I want to read just a few things that you've shared for those of you who are here live, just because I think it's very inspiring to hear what other people say. All right, I picked these totally at random, by the way. Today I'm an awesome human. You guys are posting as I'm scrolling. All right, here we go. Today I'm an awesome human because I am managing a really high profile project going live this week. All right, that is intense. Today I'm an awesome human because I am learning to give myself grace. I love babysitting my grandchildren and not having a full-time job. I love it. Today I'm an awesome human because I took a leap of faith to buy and renovate a house to be 100% wheelchair accessible. How wonderful. Today I'm an awesome human because I care enough about myself and others to take positive action each and every day. Way to go, Bob. I'm going to read a few more. Today I'm an awesome human because I'm striving to eat in a healthy way. Wonderful, Nicole. Today I'm an awesome human because I'm making kindness a daily priority. Allows me to focus on resilience. I love how different these are, and I love reading them to you because I think that when we hear what other people appreciate about themselves, it helps us find something about ourselves to appreciate. And I also, I always want to remind you that you're awesome and you're human. That's why I call you all awesome humans. You're awesome because you have so much to give. Each and every single one of you has something really unique to contribute and give in your own way, in your work, in your life, in your daily interactions. And you're also human. We're all human. And that means that life is really challenging. Being human is hard. I say this a lot. Being human is hard. And your brain can make it harder, like by criticizing yourself, like by giving you all kinds of difficult thoughts and difficult emotions. And you're also human because each of us is unique. You have your own quirks, your own ways. And so we have to really honor our human to unleash our awesome. In fact, that's one of the core things that I believe and why I do what I do. When you honor yourself as a human being, when you learn how to appreciate things about yourself, when you learn how to support yourself, when you learn how to work with your brain and your emotions by improving your emotional fitness, that is what actually allows you to unleash your awesome, to share your contribution. So thank you all for sharing. And thank you to everyone who's joined us since we began. You are never late to the Awesome Human Podcast. You're right on time. And today we're talking about creating more meaningful connections and the lost art of connecting. And we have a guest joining us in a little bit to talk about her book, The Lost Art of Connecting, and how we can create more meaningful, more authentic connections with each other at a time when I think many of us do feel less connected. And as we kind of think about this topic, I wanted to share something. This actually just happened over this weekend. So my best friend in the world, Laura Ayala, she lives in San Francisco. We met in college. We met at the end of second semester of freshman year. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but we were in a philosophy class together and she heard me say something. Neither of us remembers what it was. And she came up to me after class and she said, "I really liked what you said." And we talked for 5 minutes and we've been best friends ever since. So it's kind of friendship at first sight, best friends at first sight. I don't know if you've ever had this experience. It's really amazing. It's been, I'm going to date myself here, but I graduated from college 25 years ago. So it's been a while. So Laura lives in San Francisco. We've always lived, unfortunately, on opposite coasts. I live outside of Boston. And, you know, 25-year friendship, we've gone through all the things and so many changes in our lives and all changes in our friendship, but I'm grateful that we're still really close and really connected. And this weekend, she pinged me on text and she said, "Hey, do you have time? I was going to call you. I have a question." And I said, "Sure." And she called me and we were chatting and she said, "You know, I really love that we can just chat like this on the phone." And I said, "Well, tell me more. What do you mean?" And she said, "Well, I'm not sure that like people do this a lot anymore." She said, "I don't really do this with my like other people in my life as much." And she said something funny. She said, "You know how on Sex and the City, you know, the HBO show, that I guess there's a new Sex and the City? I wasn't aware of this. But on Sex and the City, the original show," she said, "you know, they all call each other and they chat on the phone and they just sort of catch up that way with each other. And it's really great." She said, "I really love that you and I do that." And I had this moment of realizing that it is this really beautiful thing. Like from time to time, she'll just ping me and we just catch up. And sometimes we talk for a long time. Sometimes it's 10 minutes. And I've been thinking about this because this is the topic, you know, of our podcast today, is how can we find more ways to feel connected and to connect with each other in our lives that are so busy, and also technology that I think sometimes helps us, makes us feel more disconnected. And the thing I want to tell you about myself, that this is why what Laura said was surprising, is this is very important. I am Natalie. Hi, I'm Natalie. And I really don't like the phone. Do I have any other people here with me live who are not into the phone? In fact, I have, this is taking me a while to figure out, but I kind of have phone phobia. Yeah, a bunch of people are raising their hand. So I have this thing, I don't know if any of you can relate or if you're like, "Wow, she's so weird," which is all good. Like when the phone rings, I'm like, "Oh my God, something is wrong." Does anyone else have this? Like when I was growing up in Russia, we didn't have a phone. Like many people didn't have a phone line. And we only got one at the end. And then in the States, when we got here, obviously we had a phone, but somehow like, I mean, of course I talked on the phone with my friends and my boyfriends, like we didn't have cell phones, but somehow in my adult life, like I associate like the phone, it's like high stakes. Like the phone is ringing, like, "Oh my God, is my daughter okay? Is my mom okay?" So I have this thing, like my phone rings. And so the saying in our family is that no one who loves me calls me, and definitely not without letting me know by text ahead of time. Anyone else here like that? Like, so I have actually, and when I was talking to my friend Laura, I realized that it's not that I don't like talking on the phone. It's that I have this like, I need to, it's almost like I have to like be ready for it. Does that make sense? So you know, like Laura texts me, she's like, "Hey, are you around? I wanted to call you." And like, I need a little on-ramp into the phone versus like, it's ringing and I'm not ready. And maybe it's the introvert in me that I have to sort of get ready to have a conversation. I think that makes sense as I'm saying it. Like I'm an introvert and so I have to sort of be ready for the conversation. I can't just like jump into it. Maybe it's that. But there's very few people with whom I chat on the phone. My mom, my dad,
my friend Laura. My husband Avi, I think he said the other day, he can count on less than one hand the number of times that he and I have talked on the phone. We text all the time, especially like when we're traveling. We were just texting. He's working from a room down the hall and we were just texting. So we're big texters, but he's like, yeah, I think we've talked on the phone three times, like twice when I got a new job or a promotion and I texted you. He was like, you always have to text mama. He was telling our daughter, like, hi, everything is fine. I'm going to call you. And then you get to call. So this is my this is a little Natalie confession about my phone. So I'm very iffy about the phone. And I think it's that. I think I have to sort of know it's coming, the phone call. I have to get ready for it. I can't just, maybe it's not that I hate the phone. Maybe it's I hate the intrusion of the phone call. Like it's coming and I'm in the middle of doing something or thinking about something and I can't just jump into it. Maybe that's the thing that as I'm saying it to you all, I'm learning something. Maybe that's my resistance. But anyway, what my friend Laura was talking about how beautiful it is that she and I connect on the phone from time to time made me realize how important it is to create these moments of connection. And Susan, perfect timing. I was just introducing our topic. So Susan is here. Hold on, everyone. I'm going to spotlight Susan to make sure that you can see us both. Hang on, everybody. Zoom keeps changing there, all the things. And let me spotlight myself. Wonderful. Susan, welcome to the Awesome Human Podcast.
Oh my goodness. I'm so excited to be here. And look at all your color. Wow.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
I do. Thank you so much. So as the audience knows, because they've been joining us often. So this art is my art. I paint. It's something I started to do after I burnt out. It's a huge part of how I fuel my mental health. And yeah, I love color. So, oh, you have a beautiful painting behind you, Susan, that I'm
thank you.
At.
It's actually a photograph.
It looks like a painting from here. It's really beautiful.
Thank
well,
you.
Susan, welcome. You've got 120 folks with you in real time, and then lots more folks on Facebook. And of course, tens of thousands will be watching the recording and listening to the podcast. So welcome to the Awesome Human Family. I'm so grateful to meet you. First of all, Susan, I've been a big fan. I was telling everyone before. Aww. I've been such a fan on social. See, I love social media for that because I get to like get to know something about people I don't know. So I'm just really grateful we get to connect. Thank you so much for making the time.
I am so excited and I'm so happy I put lipstick on knowing that there's 120 people.
Yes, well, I'm sure you would look beautiful either way.
I don't know about that.
Joining us. And so I'm going to do a little bit of an introduction, but I did, Sherry, I love, and this is why I wanted to invite you to join us because I think that I was just talking about how my best friend and I, who lives in San Francisco, we chat on the phone a bunch. And it's something that I realized she brought it to my attention that it helps us to have this fabric of connection. And I was just, as you were joining us, I was telling everyone that I have a thing about the phone. I'm not a phone person, but I've just realized maybe it's the intrusion of the phone call that frustrates me. Anyway, that's the chat we were having. But let me introduce Susan a little bit. And I'm so excited to talk about Susan's book, The Lost Art of Connecting, and just talk about this topic that I think is so essential of how can we connect more and better and more authentically at a time where I think where many of us are feeling disconnected. So just a brief intro for Susan, and then we'll get into you. Yeah, well, because I could read Susan's intro for half an hour. She's done so many things. But Susan is the author of The Lost Art of Connecting. It's a beautiful book. The Gather, Ask, and Do Method for Building Meaningful Relationships. I can't wait to talk about that. She's also the founder and CEO of McPherson Strategies, which is a communication consultancy. She's got dozens of years of experience in marketing and in PR and sustainability communications and has appeared on every media outlet you can all think of, from NPR to the USA Today to the New Yorker. This is not part of Susan's official bio, but just as someone who knows Susan through the lens of Instagram, Susan is such a champion of other people. I always see Susan posting about wonderful things about people in her life. And I just think that's such a beautiful thing. So I just wanted to like make that part of Susan's bio. So Susan, thank you so much for sharing yourself with us today.
Thank you. And thank you for that lovely introduction. I'm honored and just incredibly just jazzed that you would invite me. I've been a fan of yours as well.
Of course. Well, let's dive right into it. You know, I was jotting some notes of things I wanted to talk about. And, you know, I'm sure you know, and I'm sure folks listening know that our Surgeon General, I think it was a couple months ago, he issued a report. And he talked about the fact that loneliness and disconnection in the US is the most dangerous health threat that we're all facing. And I don't think anyone was surprised by that. I mean, there's tons of research that we've seen over the years that shows that we need to have regular human connection in our lives, that isolation, when you feel isolated, it actually increases inflammation, it increases your risk of heart disease. We are human beings are meant to interact with each other and connect. And obviously the pandemic kind of made that even more difficult. So I love that we're talking about this. And Susan, the first thing I want to ask you is, I'd love your thoughts, pandemic aside, right? Because it's obvious we were isolated. Why do you think that we're all feeling so much less connected to each other when we have all these ways to stay connected? Phone, Facebook, Instagram, email, text, WhatsApp. I can keep going.
Yeah. I know, it's crazy. And Threads most recently, right? TikTok. Yes. Yeah, it's like you blink and there's another platform. I really blame the loss of intentionality. I'm a huge believer in tech. I mean, I've never been a Luddite. There were many reasons I wrote my book, but I'll never forget a friend of mine telling me maybe 4 years ago that when she dropped her son and daughter off at the bus stop in the morning, she'd hug them goodbye. And they would, the two little ones, 10 and 12 years old, would get up on the big yellow school bus, take their respective seats. And as soon as they sat down, their heads bopped down to look at their handheld devices. And every other child on the school bus was doing the same. Now, my school bus days, I don't have incredibly lovely memories, but I did talk to my classmates. Mm. And that kind of put me over the edge. But again, technology is good. If we didn't have videos during the pandemic, right. I mean, for many of us, it would have been, it was hard enough. And certainly many, many people suffered tremendous losses. And I would never, shortchange that. But I do think because we had video, it certainly helped. But we've lost the intentionality. Mm. It is so easy to zap a WhatsApp. It's so easy to send an email, a voice to text, that we don't think about what we're putting in. Okay. And I think back in the 70s, the early 70s, when I was growing up, I was born in 64. So I was coming of age. Every morning at the breakfast table, my parents would have the five local newspapers splayed out and their respective typewriters in the other rooms. And they would be clipping and cutting. And then they would go to their typewriters and type short little notes that were very intentional and send them off into the mail. And I thought that is what everybody's parents did. But
what were the notes, Susan? What were the notes that they were typing?
Things just like, this made me think of you, this. So it was it was a way to let, to send some love, to send some good thoughts.
Oh, wow.
Let someone know you're on their mind. And I think we've lost that. Mm. And thank you for noticing that I love to showcase people, because there's nothing better than to show people that you've seen them, that you've heard them, that you found them interesting. So anyhow, very
really
long-winded here. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, sorry to interrupt you, but I just to stay on your, I just want to learn more about what your parents did, because I really love that. So they would read different things in the morning.
Yeah.
And then they would send clippings to a friend with a note.
Friend,
what a
colleague, relative. Yes. But the thing is, I thought everybody's parents did that. So when I got my first fax machine at the end of the 80s, which many in the audience probably have never even used, I was like a kid in the candy store, because I could take an article and send it immediately. I didn't have to go through the mail. Mm. And then 10 years later, when the internet happened, I could put 15 people on one email and say, you all should connect because you all love to cook. And this recipe for, I don't know, who was the chef at the time, Pepin's souffle will be right up your alley.
You know what, Susan, you're making me think, because I really love this. I hadn't thought about this before, that it's the intentionality. But do you also think what occurred to me as you're talking is the effort? Like it takes effort to cut a newspaper clipping with your scissors, go to your typewriter or whatever, piece of paper, write it down, get an envelope, get a stamp, put it in. Like that takes effort.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe what I, this never occurred to me, now everything is so frictionless, but by being so easy, it doesn't require effort, and effort is intentionality, and effort is how I share a part of me with you. If I send you a quick text, well, it was very easy, so I'm only sharing a little bit of me, but if I write you a handwritten note, well, that was more of me in that.
Bingo. Yeah.
So I think it's intentionality, and I think it's, so in a way, the ease that we've all gotten has actually taken away from the depth of it.
Yep. Yep. And when you mirror that with a very much of a me focused, you take away this notion of how we can be supportive. How can we be thinking of others? And again, I don't want to come across as this person that doesn't believe in taking care of myself first and only kind of thinking of others or helping others. I very much believe in taking the oxygen mask first, but I when I'm asked this question about where this disconnect has happened, I mean, obviously there's many, many reasons for people feeling lonely, but I think when we look at mass society, I do think that ease has gone, has led to a lack of
a lack. No, heart. But you know, also just on what you said, you know, I teach people to improve their emotional fitness and well-being, right? That's what my work is all about. And there's these five core skills that I teach, and obviously self-care is one of them, but kindness is another, because I don't think it's, you know, I often talk about the fact that I don't think kindness is altruistic. Kindness is the most selfish thing you can do, because when you do something intentionally kind towards another person, well, we know what happens in your brain. Your brain gives you oxytocin, dopamine, and serotonin. Yes. You feel amazing. It makes you healthier. So that's the part of intentionality. And actually, I'm curious, I'm going to ask for everyone who's here live, I'm just curious, would you put it in chat? How many of you regularly write handwritten notes? I'm just really curious, because I think, Susan, and what you're saying, just I think it's such an interesting way to think about it. And something happened yesterday that I just want to share with you. So one of my dear friends, his name is Ken, and we've known each other for like 20 years, and we're very like text, email, you know, busy humans. He was in Italy with his family for a month, and he texted me, I don't know, like a week ago. He said, hey, can you remind me of your address? And I was like, oh, sure. And yesterday, I wish I had it nearby, we got a postcard from him, and it's a picture of him being really funny. And it's a postcard to me and my husband, Avi. We're all friends. And he wrote something funny. And it was such a celebration. I was like, oh my God, did you guys see this postcard from Ken? Because he had to do this effort, right? It was like, I got more of Ken in my life. Because it wasn't because it was just the picture. It was like this whole experience. And so I really love this idea of thinking about like effort as a good thing. When we put effort into something, we're sharing more of ourselves. And wow, there's lots of folks, lots of awesome humans here who do birthday cards.
Yeah.
Aaron, wow, sends notes to his team regularly, weekly, regularly. Wow, so a lot. And I just, I think it's such a wonderful, thank you. You've already given me a new lens, Susan. Effort. I think that's the other thing, you know. I wonder your take on this. You know, there's so many articles and tweets and advice on like how to be more productive, how to make things more efficient. And I am of the opinion that we have become too efficient. So for example, I'll just give you an example. So there's all this advice about how to write short emails.
Right.
Excuse my French. I think it's a bunch of BS. I think we should write, my goal, and I've written about this, is I always want to write a warm email. And that means I write longer things. I do not write short emails. I actually think about like what's something I can share that'll make the other person on the other side feel warm. So I wonder what your take is on this, that our drive towards efficiency is also part of what's making us feel disconnected.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially because we have the means for efficiency, right? And I also would say it's possibly why we have so much vitriol, because you don't stop and think before you say something that perhaps if you did give it a little more thought and put a little more effort, you'd be like, maybe that's not the best thing to say, especially on a public platform, right? Mm. Or would I say this if I was in, you know, it face to face with this person? But I do. I think you are onto something as well. I will say, during the book writing, I interviewed a variety of leaders who were using who have seen connecting as a means to have powered their career, as well as their personal lives. And I talked to Adam Grant, and you know, one of the things Adam had said, and he told me this a long time ago as well, is take the meetings. You know, we oftentimes say, no, don't take the meetings because we don't have time and, you know, it'll drag us. And two things on that. One, his belief is you get more efficient when you take all the meetings because you use your time more effectively. And I add on top of that, my parents really embedded in me this notion that we don't know what we don't know. And when we don't take something because we think it can't help us, we are missing out on something incredibly magical, mystical, dare I say. But and so by putting these boxes that I'm not going to meet with this person or take this call or, you know, read this email from this person because this person can't help me, we're missing again. Now, I also just want to covet that there are times when you're super busy, somebody's ill in your family. So I just want to kind of.
No, of course, boundaries are important. But I think to what you said, it's, and again, this is my kind of something I've been thinking about a lot, is this drive for more efficiency with the purpose for what? Like, what is all this efficiency getting us? Just more time to be more efficient, right? Yes. And to your point of course, we need to set healthy boundaries, and sometimes you're too busy. But I think it's, you know, the word that comes up for me is transactional. It becomes very transactional. Like, I'm not going to take this meeting, or I'm not going to do this call because I'm not sure, you know, it may not, like, how is this going to help me? Right. And I talked to my daughter about this. My daughter, Mia, is 19. She's just finished her freshman year in college. And I forget what it was about. Congratulations. Thank you. Thank you. I can't believe it. She was 5 yesterday, literally yesterday. So parent time, it's weird. But she was taught, oh, I know what it was. So she is on pre-med track, and she really wants to go to medical school and be a doctor. And so my husband and I, whenever we meet someone or it's a friend who has gone to medical school, we're always like, Mia, connect with them, talk to them. And when we started doing this, I mean, I know we're parents and we're being annoying. You know, when your parent says something, you're like, what? I don't want to do that. But she would always say, like, yeah, but I'm not sure, like, what would I, like, why would I do that? What would be the conversation about? And I remember telling her, I said, Mia, you don't know. And that's the whole thing. Like, you don't know. It's not to make it useful. It's, you might learn something. And so I think this drive to efficiency and just, like, what's in it for me, I think you're absolutely, you know, I think it's a big part of it. Well, so let's talk about things we can do. So in your work, you talk about this paradigm shift for creating more connections. Can you talk about that? What's the paradigm shift we can make? Because we've talked about the problems.
Yes.
Let's actually talk about how we can do ourselves and shift. You know, in my mind, whenever anyone asks me about, like, how do we change, you know, well-being at work, I always say it has to begin with ourselves. We have to begin with ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the methodology in the book is called Gather Anew. But before I jump into that, I will say the underlying notion throughout everything in the book, and it'll make sense when I describe the methodology, is that we turn networking, or we flip networking on its head. Instead of thinking traditional networking, you walk into a room, transactional, what am I going to get? How am I going to get that new promotion or that raise or that job or, you know, that date, what have you? And instead, when you walk into rooms, whether they're virtual or in person, you think about, what can I give? How can I support? How can I help others find the success or the dreams that I have been able to? Okay. So with that in mind, the first portion of the three step is gather. And in the gather phase, you connect with the most important person in your life, yourself, which we tend to put second or third. And you think about, what are your superpowers? What are your secret sauces? When you walk into a room, what do you have to offer? And we all have them, many of them. Two.
What's yours, Susan?
Connecting.
I love that. I love that. And actually, I just want to pause on that because we do have the benefit for this podcast of a live audience. I love everyone. So actually, everyone, if you're listening as a podcast or as a recording, take a moment right now and just and feel free to pause us, like hit pause, shut up, Susan and Natalie.
Please.
And think about, because I'm a huge, like Susan, my obsession in life is just to get people to do the things we're talking about. So right now, think about some of your superpowers. And if you're here with us live, would you put them in chat so Susan and I can see? But just think about what are some things that you have to give to others. Like, I love that question. What are your superpowers?
Look at this.
All right, Dina, you get the Awesome Human Virtual Award for going first. Uplift others, make them smile, make them feel good, have a little silly fun. I love that. Listening without judgment. Oh, what a wonderful superpower. Forgiveness, laughter, my laughter. Kimberly, now I wish I could hear your laugh. Let's see, what would I say? I would say that my superpower is fueling people with a lot of energy, a lot of like vibrant energy, and
I love that.
Activating them to do the thing that they know how to do or want to do but haven't done. I'd say that's probably my superpowers. Remaining calm, empathy and positivity, forgiveness, taking care of others, holding space for people, finding the silver lining. I love these. I just wanted to share these because they're so beautiful. Like, yes, these are your superpowers. Attentiveness.
You have an amazing audience.
I do. I am very lucky to have this incredible community of awesome humans. And again, this is just the folks here live. Thousands and thousands will watch the recording. And I do want to encourage you, if you're watching the recording on YouTube, put your superpowers in comments. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, you can always send me an email. It's natalie@happier.com. I always want to hear about your superpowers. I love that question, Susan. All right, so that's the gather part. Like, what do I have to give? What are my superpowers?
Yes. And then also in gather, you think about who it is that you want to connect with or reconnect with that you can support, but also they can support you.
Mm.
Okay. And lastly, in the gather phase, you think about how you're going to break out of that hermetically sealed bubble that so many of us live in, where we tend to attract and meet and hang out with people who look like us, sound like us, the same age, race, and color, and cultural heritage as us. So that's the gather phase.
Mm.
The ask phase is learning to ask the meaningful questions of others so we can learn what their hopes and dreams are. And being a very good listener. And you'll see why. Because then you get to the do phase, which is the phase I love to be in. And sometimes I get there too fast because I'll ask questions and then I'll be so excited to do that I'll miss what is being said. So in the do phase, you become the reliable, trustworthy, resourceful person that you are. And you follow through and follow up. And this is a good exercise. You know, when I was first doing talks after, when the pandemic, when we started to come out, it was a really good, healthy time to do it. But I think no matter where you are in your career journey, let's say you're fresh, new at an organization or approaching retirement, doing this kind of healthy exercise every, 6 months or so, whatever you want to call it, you don't have to call it gather, ask, do, but I think it can help you think about ways to tap in to not only new people that you haven't met, but the people that you have met and perhaps lost touch with.
Mm, I love that. I want to go back because I think it's such, I love frameworks because they activate, like the thing that I'm obsessed with is action, action. To me, like we all know the things and it's like, how do we do them? Tell me again the question, because I love that question about people's dreams, and say that question again.
Learning to ask others the meaningful questions so that you can learn what their hopes and dreams are.
I love that so much. You know, it's think about like if that could be your goal for like every conversation.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be in a networking setting. I think it's such a beautiful, like as soon as you said that, Susan, like this lens in my brain shifts and it becomes like exciting. Like I am excited to like have a conversation to learn that, because isn't that why we're all here, is to discover that about ourselves and to share that. You know, something I did, so it was my 25th college reunion a couple months ago, and we were driving. My husband and I went to the same college, Wesleyan University. He was a year younger, but he was coming with me. And my best friend, Laura, who I was talking about, also was coming with us. And we were in the car, and Laura was like, oh my God, haven't been to campus in forever, kind of intimidated, there's gonna be all these conversations. And I don't know why in that moment, Susan, I kind of decided two things. I was not going to ask people what they do, because that's the common question, like, hey, what do you do? What do you do, Natalie? I was gonna say, I'm not gonna ask people that, I'm gonna ask them something else. And the second thing I decided is I'm not gonna do my spiel. Like, I'm not gonna do my like, oh, I do this, this, this. And it was such a wonderful experiment, because I learned so many different things and I had such fun conversations. But I do have to say, and I'm sharing this because I think that learning to ask great questions is one of the most important things. And it's just something I'm working on. I'm definitely more of a talker than a listener, so I'm working on that. That's why I speak for a living. but I think it is so important to ask questions and to listen. And so I just want to share. So I would ask people, you know, I was running into my classmates I haven't seen in 25 years. And I think everyone expected each other to ask like, hey, what do you do? And I didn't ask that. So I would ask people like, so where have you traveled? Or I started asking this question, and my daughter was making fun of me after I told her this. I was like, so what's your jam these days? And like, it really, you know, and my daughter Mia was like, I don't know if that's very cool, Mom. I'm like, I don't know. But it was so interesting because it kind of paused people I learned all these different things. And so, Susan, can you share, because I think it's like, what are some of your favorite meaningful questions to ask? Because I think we can all learn to ask better questions of each other, not better, like smarter or like wiser, but question that actually allows the other person to share something really meaningful about themselves.
Well, I have lots of thoughts on this. And obviously it depends on the situation, because you're in a Zoom chat with your colleagues. Your questions may be very different than you are at a, an event where you're in a community of people that you've met, or if it's people you've already met. So, you know, just for the audience, please keep that in mind. You're going to have to meld. And if you do end up reading my book, I can't remember which chapter it is, but there's like 12 questions to have in your back pocket. I will also just add for the introverts in the audience, and I assume there are many because they're half the population. My next life, I will be one.
I am one, just for FYI, even though people don't think that of me, I really am one.
Beautiful. But the thing is the beautiful thing here is if you learn to ask questions, then guess what? You get to sit back and just absorb. Mm. And clearly that's why you are so good at what you're doing, because you are very good, Natalie, at asking questions that get beyond the surface.
Well, so thank you. That's one of the biggest compliments you could pay me. I just have to say it's something that I have really worked on and doing these podcasts and these interviews. So I really, coming from you, I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, and my first tip is anything but the weather. Okay. When we have conversations about the weather, we are giving up nothing and we're gaining nothing. Now, we are in a horrible world of climate change right before our very eyes. So I don't take that lightly. But the, you know, when you start a conference call or you're in a meeting and you're like, God, that rained today, it is your way of putting up blockers. Okay. Mm. And again, you're going to leave with nothing. It's like eating Cheetos, right? You eat Cheetos and they may kind of like taste good, but there's no sustenance.
I love that.
Okay. Two, you obviously want to be careful because you don't want to appear like overbearing or nosy or, you know, asking questions that might make people feel uncomfortable. So I have some goof. I mean, I have very like standard ones where, you know, what brought you here? And, you know, what was the last great film or podcast that you listened to? Just to get, because then you get a sense of people's interest. Another wonderful one is, if you could be anywhere on the planet right now and not right here, where would it be and why? Another one is, if you could solve any problem in the world and finances weren't a question or an issue, what would that be and why? Okay. And what these questions do is it starts to give you a sense of who the person is. Mm. And oftentimes, not all the time, but when you get these types, when you listen to the answers, you can find what I call the commonality in the uncommonality. where you align on values or maybe where you don't. And that's okay too. But in other words, these types of questions go beyond. Another thing, and I, you know, must give credit to the incredible Brené Brown. When we say to people, how are you? Most likely they're going to respond and say, meh, I'm good, I'm fair. Instead say, you know, in 3 to 5 words, tell me how you're feeling today. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder to say meh when someone asks you like that.
Yeah, I love those, Susan. And I love what you said about the weather. It's this default, right? It's like this, again, it's a low effort, low intentionality, easy default. And again, when we go, as we talk, I keep going back to this. And it's so funny, Susan, I've been thinking about this in a totally different sphere. The idea that our lives have become, we're not putting enough effort into things. It's not that we're not busy or doing a lot or tired, but the things are not taking effort. Because my thinking into that came from a very different space. Creativity and doing things with our hands. The more I think about it, I think it is absolutely essential to being alive and well-being. So it's something I'm starting to explore as kind of my next book and what I really want to help people do. So I've been thinking a lot about that. Everything is easy. So we're not like washing clothes. We're not cooking as much. We can order takeout. You know, we're not drawing or painting. We can make digital art, and we're not meant to live in a bubble, digital bubble. So that's where I was coming at for the efficiency and ease. But what you're talking about, like, that's why asking, like, oh, talking about the weather, it's too easy. So therefore we don't share anything of ourselves. And therefore, we don't feel connected. We just had a transactional conversation about the weather. So I love your suggestions. I love the suggestion. I love the question of just asking, like, what's a great podcast or a book or a movie you've seen recently? Because it's, I think it's also, it's low stakes enough that if someone is a little bit more guarded, they don't feel like they have to open up, you know, their kimono and here's how I'm feeling. We all have something favorite recently. We've seen, like, oh my God, that movie. Oh my God.
Even meal, you know, food. I mean, I often like will ask people what their favorite food was growing up, which gives you amazing insight.
Oh, I love that. Susan, what was your favorite food growing up? I love this question because I love food.
My late mom's Belenses, which would give you immediately, you know, I ate.
Well, I immediately want to ask, what is the, so Belenses, because I'm Russian. So, you know.
Well, I'm Ukraine. I mean, my three of my four grandparents came in the early 20th century from the pogroms. They would have been killed if they had stayed in Ukraine, of course. But Belenses, they're like the Jewish version of crepes, okay? You know, every culture has some version of, you know, a pancake, you know, whether it's, you know, empanadas or burritos, you name it. But it would be filled with a mixture of cottage cheese, cream cheese, eggs. And my mom made them savory. A lot of people put sweet. And so today, if I'm somewhere and they offer it, I'm like, oh, can't do it. But what is the memories is not just eating them. It's the making of the batter and pouring it. And sometimes she'd like toss me we called them the skins, the wrappers, and they would just be good with like butter and salt and pepper on them. And so my mom was killed in a horrible tragedy when I was 21. So my memories of her are so, and I'm 58 now. So the memories are very, very condensed, but like, I can still smell batter and that, you know, I would like dip my finger into the cheese. Cause this was before we were all afraid of germs, you know?
Of course.
So, there you go.
Love Susan. There's so many things I want to say. The first thing I want to say is like, we all just got to know you in a way that none of us would know you from your book or social media or emails, right? Like by asking that question that you gave us, you got to know something about you that is so essentially Susan. It is so essentially human. Also, I am sure, and I'll share mine, so many people listening immediately either thought of their favorite food, their favorite childhood memory with food, Belenses. And so we connected. So I'll just tell you, I didn't know you had that head. So I grew up in Russia and we're Russian Jews. We came here as refugees in 1989. I grew up in Leningrad, St. Petersburg.
But, you know, my late father was a Russian history professor and used to go to the Soviet Union every other year, starting in the 60s.
Amazing.
We'll have to talk offline about all
No, we do have to talk offline. But again, we wouldn't be having you and I wouldn't, I'm so excited to now talk to you about that offline. But it all came from this question. And my grandparents are all from the Ukraine originally, but they weren't as smart as yours. They, during the pogroms, and for everyone listening, pogroms were the, it's when the Jews were attacked in the Ukraine. They didn't leave the country. They ran south to Azerbaijan. My mom's parents, Azerbaijan, it's now its own country. I was actually born in Baku, the capital of Azerbaijan, and then grew up because in Azerbaijan, people were more friendly to Jews. But you talking about blintzes, you know, so in my family, my mom made blinchiki. Okay. So we call them blinchiki in Russian. And so there's the crepe, which is the plain blinchiki, which is my favorite still. Yeah. And my mom makes them a little bit sweet, not too sweet.
Oh, no, I'm just kidding.
And then we eat them. My favorite way to eat them is with sour cream.
Yeah.
I'm someone I can just live on sour cream. So like if, you know, and I have a hard time if someone tells me they hate sour cream. So if anyone here had sour cream, please don't tell me because I really want to love you forever. But I have a hard time with that. And my daughter, so when my daughter Mia was three, we moved from New York City to Boston to be close to my parents and my grandparents who were still alive. Every Sunday, my dad would come pick her up. They live 2 miles away. And on the drive, I don't know, what did it take? 7 minutes to their house for breakfast, they would call my mom and Mia would put in her order. So she was 3 years old. They did this until she went to college. And her order was either blinchiki. In her case, she got Nutella if she wanted, sour cream and cottage cheese, which we call tvarog. It's our, or she would put the order in for aladushki, which I don't know if you have. So aladushki are, they're smaller. They're kind of like mini pancakes. They're thicker because they're made with a yogurt and baking soda in addition to water and eggs. And so that's my daughter's childhood. Like she, blinchiki, blinchiki. And the funny thing, Susan, you said, so you called them skins.
Yes.
Mia, for some reason, when my mom would just give her a plain, you know, just the crepe, the blinchik, she would call it tryapki, which means a rag. And so from now on, my whole family, we call blinchiki tryapki. So now when we go over to my mom, she asks me, do you want tryapki? And then, so I just wanted to share that. But again, what I love, like you're giving us all such a gift, Susan, because what a simple question.
Yeah.
And yet look at the richness of what I now know about you, everyone here who's listening.
Yep.
And then I had something that I really wanted to share because it's something, it's how you and I connect. We have something in common. How awesome is that? I had no idea. So I love, like, again, just by, like, this is the example of why asking more meaningful questions gives us so much richness and fun. I just want to say, like, it also makes interactions fun. I think,
go ahead. Well, no, and the thing is, you know, this notion about listening, because this also means with any of the 100 plus people that are listening, when they want to follow up with one of you or me, if they mention this, right, it shows that they were, you know, and then maybe they'll share theirs, you know? So it's like a, it's something that kind of just seeds additional dialogue, additional care, additional interest. Mm. And in this case, you're learning about people from a different background than yourself as well.
I love that. Okay, everyone who's here alive, because we're almost running out of time, but please share your favorite childhood food, because now Susan and I have to know, now everyone, I really want your favorite childhood food. Please share. And now it'll be time for lunch after this, which I love this question, Susan, because, you know, there's people who eat to live. I live to eat. I think food is like the greatest expression of being human. So I love this. All right, let's hear my mom's spaghetti. Chocolate fried pies, homemade pierogies.
Yes.
Chocolate fried pies.
I don't know what that is.
I know, like I've never heard of that. Fried banana. Okay, everyone will be hungry. I just disclaimer. I'm
skillet
so sorry.
And eggs, potatoes.
My late mom's skillet potatoes. Eggs and potatoes. Pot roast mashed potatoes, homemade bread.
Cherry jello. That's my generation.
With whipped cream and fruit cocktail. My grandmother's spaghetti and meatballs, fried green tomatoes, my mom's mac and cheese, homemade cinnamon rolls, my late grandmother's homemade ravioli. Like, I just have to say, like, I don't know most people here. Some are regular, so I recognize your name. But it's like these little, I feel like there's like little threads that are now connecting our hearts. You know what I mean? Just
banana
even
pudding.
Reading it that way. What a gift, Susan. All right, as we're I could talk to you for a really long time. I hope we keep talking. So just in closing, if I could ask you, like, because you've given us so many actionable tips, you know, some people still, and I used to have this, I see this in my daughter, I hear this from people, even if they do like recognize they have superpowers and they want to get in touch with someone, sometimes there's this hesitation, right? There's this like, well, I haven't talked to this person in a long time, it's going to be so weird to reach out. Or, you know, you walk into a room of people and it's like, and I don't think you have to be an introvert for that. It's just, can you give some suggestions for how to overcome that?
Yeah, of course. I tend to think when I walk into a room, virtual or in person, the power of three, that I'm going to meet three people. I'm going to share three things. And I'm going to learn three things. And then I'm going to go hide in the bathroom. So if you put the wrappers around it, it's more palatable. The other thing, and not all the time, but in this day and age, you can often find out who's going to be in the room before you go. And, you know, if you're nervous, find the connector in the room, find the Susan in the room, right? Who's going to like hold your hand in a way. And the lastly, lead with thinking ahead. And I realize sometimes we're like, we have no superpowers. Maybe you speak a few languages. Maybe you're a great cook. Maybe you are good at memorizing. I mean, I saw many people add, before you go, give yourself a little bit of mantra so that you can be reminded of that, as opposed to walking into a room and kind of having to like, you know, interview somebody, right? I mean, think about ways you can be helpful to others. And I will say, you know, after the pandemic, it was a great leveling set, right? No matter who you were, no matter where you were on the planet, whether you're a CEO or, you know, work at a grocery store, you still experienced this. It was a global phenomenon. And I think it kind of leveled the playing field, because no longer it's like, oh, he's more important, because we all bring value. And I think that's something we have to continue telling ourselves.
Yeah, it's why I love that you mentioned that. And I think it's, you know, I begin every podcast episode and every keynote I do, I ask people to complete this sentence, I'm an awesome human because. Because we forget that we have our humanness and our awesomeness to share. And we always begin this way. If you scroll up in chat, you'll see people sharing. Shea is asking, could you repeat the three things?
Of course, of course. Now I'm forgetting. Yeah. Go with the intention to meet three people. It could be four, it could be two, it could be five, right? It all depends. Learn three things. So to learn, you're going to have to ask some questions. And then share three things. So you're going to need to be vulnerable.
I love that. And, you know, the thread to me, one of the most like powerful things in your work and what you've shared today, and I want to close with that, is I think there's this huge opening that we get instead of going into a meeting or an interaction or into a room with what will people think of me. If we shift, or even what is it that I can give, or, you know, if we can shift into what if I approach, like, how can I help? And maybe you don't know how, but in a conversation, your entire lens is, I'm going to try to find a way to help. I think that, I mean, it puts us into what's called a pro-social mindset. So instead of fear of judgment and thinking everyone's looking at us or comparing us, we're now in a way that we're thinking of how we can contribute to others. And that has tremendous benefits. When you're in that mindset, you actually have less fear, you're more motivated, you're more open, you bring more of yourself. And I think it's one of the most important mental shifts that actually to overcome any kind of what's called social anxiety. You know, when people ask me about public speaking, you know, I speak for a living and I'm weird. I have no fear of public speaking. I'm like one of those weird people because it is a really common fear. And my main advice that I give to people, Susan, and I want to share it because it's, you're making me think that it all comes down to that, is I tell people, when you go on stage or present at work, right, in a meeting, instead of thinking about what will people think of me, what if I screw up, think about what, there's someone in this room that I can help with what I share. And just focus on that. Yes. And that, I still do this before I go on stage, right? I'm flying next week. I'm speaking to 7,000 people at Charlotte Convention Center. And I don't do it because I'm nervous. But before I get on stage, the last thing I think about is there is someone in this audience today who really needs to hear what I have to give. And I get to help them. And I do it because it just helps me bring my best, fullest self. And I think that's the biggest like thing as we've talked that I keep coming back to in your work and what you've shared. It is really shifting that mindset of like, how can I help? How, and you could help someone by asking them a great question.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, Susan, like you smiled so much when you were talking about the Balintzes, right? And so help doesn't mean you like create a networking connection or we, I think, help each other when we help the other person feel seen or just
1,000%. I mean, I know we're at time, but I want to say when you hear somebody share their beautiful or, you know, something about them that's special. And then when you introduce that person to someone else using that, you are giving that person the greatest gift because it's showing that you listened, that you heard, that you saw. And it gives you some kind of magic tidbit to be able to introduce. And when I do workshops, I have people define their own chief differentiating factor, their superpowers. And then the person interviewing them would then take the exercise and introduce them to someone else in the room.
I love that. How beautiful. Susan, thank you so much for your wisdom, for the warmth with which you share it, for giving us so many like super practical ways to bring more meaningful connection in our lives. I love that you made it so like I learned a lot and I'm really good at this stuff. So thank you so much for that. Thank you everyone for being here. Thank you everyone who joined us live on Zoom. As a reminder, if you're listening to this on your favorite podcasting platform, if you want to be part of the live audience when we record the podcast, just go to nataliekogan.com/podcast. And I'm so glad, I was just going to say, Susan's book is amazing. It's called The Lost Art of Connecting, the Gather, Ask, Do method that Susan introduced to us today is the core of the book. So please check it out. It will also be, of course, in your follow-up email and your episode notes. We'll have a link to Susan's work. And I love to give homework at the end of every podcast because it's all about taking action. So my homework for everyone, your awesome human homework, is think of someone that you want to connect with. Maybe someone you haven't talked to in a week or in a really long time. And reach out to them in a meaningful way today. Or I always like to give options in your next meeting. Maybe it's a work meeting. Many of you are running to your work meetings. Can you bring that lens? How can I help someone in this meeting? Maybe by being seen or maybe asking a meaningful question and see what happens. Tracy is asking, The Lost Art of Connecting is Susan's book. The Lost Art of Connecting, the Gather, Ask, Do method for building meaningful relationships. Susan, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Awesome humans have joined us in all the ways. I will see you and hear you and connect with you in ears in a few weeks in our next episode. Thank you
Happy
so much.
Happy Wednesday. Get yourself some Balintzes and I can't pronounce your, what was the?
Balintzes and Blinchiki. Yes.
Yes, Blinchiki. Awesome. You'll be well. You'll be so happy.
Yes, I love it. Again. Thank you so much. Take care, everyone. All right, awesome humans. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast, and I would love to know what resonated. What questions do you have? What are you excited to practice? So send us an email to team@happier.com, and please rest assured, if you send an email that you'd love for me to read, I will always get it in my inbox. My team will send it to me. Let's stay in touch so you can keep practicing skills to help you struggle less and thrive more in work and life. The best way to do it is to go to happier.com and subscribe to my weekly newsletter. I promise you, I would never send you spam. It's just more practices, skills, and stories to help you embrace your inner awesome human. I can't wait to see you next week.